Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello and welcome. This is All About Android, episode 376, recorded live on July 3rd, 2018. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. That's you, and I'm Florence Ion.
And I'm Ron Richards, and we are down a team member because Mr. Jason Hall is out on vacation. I believe he is up in the Pacific Northwest enjoying the outdoors. So we picked up the phone and called one of my heroes, Mr. Patrick Norton, to join us.
Patrick, so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. And Ron, I'm just going to sit here snuffling for a couple minutes as I try to pull myself together.
Patrick's the best. Patrick and I had the pleasure of spending many years together in the Revision 3 warehouse district of San Francisco.
Making East Coast ska references exactly. And discussing the finer points of punk rock. I just have two words for you if you haven't heard them yet. Brass Against, which is a brass band doing Rage Against the Machine covers. Look for the YouTube videos. Ooh, just going to lay that out there.
I was going to say.
It's glorious. Anytime Tom Morello retweets a brass band, you know it's going to be a good day.
Fair. Yeah, it's true. Well, yeah, so Patrick joins us from Tech Thing, AVXL, and of course, This Week in Computer Hardware right here on the Twit Network. So you're no stranger to Twit. So welcome to All About Android, your first time on the show.
I remember when Twit was one room, one very old computer, and one ISDN line, and a semi-functional air conditioner. Oh, memories.
but if you remember correctly, nearly 10 years ago, you and I helped pave the way for app reviews with App Judgment on Revision 3. Remember that?
That was a fun show.
And
app reviewers still got excited when you reviewed your apps back then.
Oh, they still get excited. They still get excited.
At this point, it was really personal, I think, or maybe personally terrifying because there were so few video places doing it then, and the people would be like, you understood what I was doing. I was just like, yes, I love your app, sir. Please step away. The restraining orders are just outside. It was a good show. It amazes me how many apps I have. I probably shouldn't hold this phone up on this show, it's okay. My next phone's probably going to be Android. That's a conversation for later.
You bounce back and forth a lot, don't you?
Yeah,
the last time we talked, you were on Android, right?
Yeah, I was running an LG. There was a Motorola, an entry level Motorola G4 when they first did some of the decent LTE coverage on that, and that was when I first really understood what it meant as an Android user to have to wait for your carrier to pass along the firmware update, because I specifically bought this particular Motorola phone, this inexpensive Motorola phone, because I was going to be able to put massive micro SD cards into it, all of which puked upon contact, or I should say the operating system puked upon contact with the SD cards, but it was fixed, and Motorola is like, it's fixed. I'm like, great. Give me the download. And they're like, no, we don't work that way. Talk to AT&T. and so I suddenly had a whole level of sympathy for developers on the Android side of things. Because that's – I digress. You guys have a bigger story.
Not total digression. I mean, there's some of that discussion on today's show. I mean, we're going to talk about some news that we thought was done with, but apparently it's back because everything old is new again, including Apple versus Samsung. Yep, that's still happening. We've got Samsung sending photos out to random contacts, and more Samsung news of foldable phone and some other. We've got a bunch of interesting stuff going on. So actually, why don't we let's lead in to our first block of the day.
Today on Android News, we got more fireworks, kind of like our Oreos.
If you want to know what that's all about, tune in to the end of the show for a special Flo
Oreo bonus
cookies. alone in a room. That is green. And this is all about Android, but we have to talk a little bit about Apple v. Samsung, because apparently that is still a thing that is happening. In fact, it's such a thing, I think today was the sort of the conclusion. So those of you who have been following along with this for the last couple of years may recall
Seven years.
I feel like it's as long as the show has been going on. We've been talking about Apple and Samsung and this whole thing. Because the All About Android started in 2011, and it's 2018, 2011. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
And lucky number seven, I feel like we're finally coming to a conclusion of this long saga. It's like Lost in its sixth season. We're just trying to wrap it all up here and figure out, you know, where are they in heaven? Like, where are they? Spoiler alert. So Judge Lucy Koh, the judge of a part of this long-standing saga, said that the two companies, Apple and Samsung, had informed her that they had reached a settlement. What that settlement was, that was not disclosed, so we don't really know what's going on there, except for how much they're paying, which is half of what initially was asked for. So the patent battle started in 2011 and initially resulted in $1 billion ruling in Apple's favor. I believe it's down to about like the mid 500 mils right now. A series of appeals pushed the dispute to the Supreme Court and back as the companies continually rehashed which patents were infringed and, more recently, exactly how much Samsung owes Apple because of the infringement. So the case originally revolved around a number of design and utility patents for basic functions of a smartphone like Tap to Zoom and the home screen app grid, things that we're all pretty used to as Android users and I guess some of us as iPhone users. But then eventually it transformed and evolved to include all the things that Samsung copied Apple on in the early days to try and sort of get a leg up on the competition. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's not clear why this is all coming to a close now. Maybe because, you know, I posited maybe because there's other things to start worrying about in life. And, you know, maybe we should just close a chapter on this and move on to other things. I don't know. What do you, Patrick, you've got something to say about this, surely, after 7 years.
Well, this went to the Supreme Court. It was basically like the jury agrees, like, okay, Samsung violated Apple patents. It goes to the Supreme Court where they're basically arguing, Samsung and Apple were arguing over, one small chunk of the case, which is how much of the profits should be awarded to the holder of a design patent when the patent is violated. It's been going on forever. They went back and forth on the patents. I just feel cheated, because this is literally 7 years this has been going on. And then all of a sudden, like, the judge is like, slides a filing in, hands it to the clerk, whatever happens, maybe somebody goes punk and notarizes it, but that they've reached a settlement. It's gone from $1 billion to $539 billion sometime back in May. Apple, being Apple, we believe deeply in the value of design, and our teams work tirelessly to create innovative products that delight our customers. This case has always been about more than money. Apple ignited the smartphone revolution with an iPhone, and it is a fact that Samsung blatantly copied our design. It's like the most passive-aggressive PR statement even for Apple.
And you do have to say it with a whisper voice.
Even for Apple. Well, that's the key.
Even for Apple. I mean, this is, somebody's been reading Apple press releases for, like, ever. This is even passive-aggressive and snarky for Apple. It is important that we continue to protect the hard work and innovation of so many people at Apple. We're grateful for the jury for their service, and pleased they agree that Samsung should pay for copying our products.
And Samsung declined to comment. So Samsung has no raspy Batman quotations.
Samsung went, you know what? We made billions, kiss our ass. Do you really need the OLEDs for the iPhone 10? Because LG, as you're ramping up LG on that, ramp up faster. Settle the case. I can't say the next word I was about to say. But it was very Brooklyn on Saturday night. Part of me wonders if like what horrible machinations were going on in the background over this. Was Apple like, give us preferential terms on those? Because Samsung's bringing on memory manufacturing, like, mm-hmm. they're bringing the online, like, what, 20% of the current global capacity. They're going to bring on the equivalent of 20% of the current global capacity in memory. So memory prices should be dropping down. They're supplying, you know, OLED screens for the iPhone 10. Yes, there's, you know, recently been a second source of the OLED screens for LG, but nobody knows how stable that is. It's, I really would love to know what the backstory on why suddenly after 7 years, they're like, we got to go get some fireworks Oreos.
Well, yeah, but you gotta imagine that it's the settlement. It's got to be less than the $1 billion ruling that went in Apple's favor, mm-hmm. right? So the court is saying Samsung, you owe Apple $1 billion. They go in a back room and negotiate. And Patrick, all the points that you make there in terms of equipment, whether it's chips or screens and all this sort of stuff. So you gotta imagine there's some deal that has value in the the 9 digits capacity, whether it's actual cash or product or market, you know. Market guidance and deference and like who knows, you know, and sadly I don't think we'll ever find out. That's the rough thing is that I don't think well these terms I bet you are going to be under lock and key for a while. These mysteries of mobile. Yeah.
Sorry.
But it is sure not a it's sure not a good week for Samsung. We are heavy on Samsung stuff this week, so bear with us. But some of this stuff is just too good not to talk about. So enough from the patent stuff. A whole lot of you in the audience emailed us about this. Actually, the fact that Samsung's default messaging app on the Galaxy S9s recently had a bug that would randomly send photos. And entire galleries of photos to random people from your contacts.
Oops.
So like I mentioned, a bunch of you emailed us about it with your experiences of it. Gizmodo actually wrote about it. You can see it there on the screen. And Gizmodo reached out to Samsung, and Samsung responded acknowledging the issue. They said, we are aware of the reports regarding this matter, and our technical teams are looking into it. Concerned customers are encouraged to contact us directly at 1-800-SAMSUNG. They also reached out to T-Mobile, and T-Mobile just said, it's a Samsung problem. It's not our problem.
Yeah.
And the current prevailing theory is that it's a bug with Samsung's implementation within their messaging app with the newly rolled out RCS profile updates that rolled out at T-Mobile and some of the other carriers. And we've discussed RCS a lot in the past. That is hopefully the future of messaging to replace the long outdated and woefully good SMS protocol, which I think is long time to be retired. But yeah, this is not a good look to just randomly send photos because the wrong photo to the wrong person could be a problem.
I mean, we already have all like sorts of security concerns and like Patrick had mentioned earlier, we've got already all sorts of annoyances with security updates and things of the sort. Just having random photos though sent out to like people on your contacts list is not really bad news. That's just not good news, especially for the Galaxy S9. I mean, and especially the same week that you're getting a bunch of rumors about the Note 9 or whatever's coming out next.
Well, here's the thing I'm worried about is I don't want this to blow back on RCS.
Oh, yeah, that's also true.
I don't want people to hear that this happened and then blame the protocol for it. And then we finally have a superior protocol over SMS and people aren't going to want to use it because it might send my photos when it was Samsung's mistake.
It's true. We can't have one bad apple ruin it for all of us. No. Patrick, do you have any preference on RCS, SMS? I mean, this is a thing that we talk a lot about in the Android world because our messaging life is so fragmented.
Burdensome.
I'll be honest with you. I've been moving my entire messaging minus some outliers, some friends and family that will, you know, like I'm never going to get my mom on Signal. I've moved almost my entire life to Signal in terms of messaging. And I just stopped thinking about it when I started using Signal because it was like end-to-end encryption. You know, my really paranoid friends that work in pen testing have everything set up. One friend of mine actually had everything set up for the messages to disappear every 24 hours until he realized that sometimes he actually could not check his phone every 24 hours. It was missing. There was, I think, a spousal-related message that was missed based on his incredibly high settings of security on Signal. But I'll be honest with you. When I think about SMS at all at this point, it's almost entirely whether or not I want to use it for 2FA or if I have any alternatives to it for two-factor authentication for various websites and services. And everything else are just run through Signal. And I probably should start thinking about RCS, but entire sections of my brain in messaging just kind of shut down when I decided to shove everybody I could on the Signal.
probably the smart move. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that because I actually noted yesterday, in fact, that I was looking because my spoiler, when we get to the arena, I have a messaging app. As I was playing with it, I noticed that the majority of my messages in SMS are two-factor authentication now. And I've moved a lot of it not to Signal but to WhatsApp, which I know, say what you will, Facebook owned, yada, yada. It's just right now that's working for me with family and friends and things like that. But, yeah, SMS is almost just becoming a 2FA delivery mechanism, so to speak.
Yeah. And not a particularly secure one if you spend a lot of quality time with – I will affectionately say hardcore technical individuals, hardcore security professionals. But yeah, I mean, it's also one of the things where you know, this is going to be one of those specs where, you know, companies like Apple say, well, eventually consider RCS when there are no other viable alternatives in the market and they are forced to consider using a non-Apple spec. I'm just going to slag on Apple today because A, I'm on Android. I'm on All About Android B because I'm I've been an iPhone user and I'm psyching myself up for walking away from several $100 worth of apps.
Well, you're also walking away from a unified messaging trajectory. I mean, iMessage is like everything I want from messaging app on Android that I do not have.
iMessage isn't even all that cracked up, all that great, to be honest with you.
I know. I just want to send text messages from the plane via Wi-Fi without using Allo.
Yeah. Or, to have Signal. You can use Signal on all the, Signal.
Yeah.
Signal
will
change your life.
I mean, the whole question is that we talked about this ad nauseum, but it's a data-based messaging platform versus an over-the-air protocol, you know, and SMS works on all the platforms because it existed before smartphones existed. And now that we're in a post-smartphone world, Apple, you know, carriers, Google, whomever, they're not going to agree on a protocol like SMS. And again, you know, I hope it's RCS, but we're already seeing different flavors of RCF, different profiles for carriers and all that sort of stuff. It's just like, we can't, it's like, I don't want to get too close to socialism or anything like that, but these are the signs where, like, can we just sacrifice capitalism for the greater good?
I have a friend of mine who's a really big free market kind of guy, and I love him to death, but, you know, his solution is like, if there's a true free market, I have an alternative to Comcast. I'm like, you know, trying to explain this to him, like, it was like the conversation of net neutrality was one of my favorite, least favorite conversations ever. But, you know, this is one of those situations where, like, hey, that country where everything works that you went to and everybody had like 200 megabits per second on their phone everywhere they go, even underground, in the mall, on the train, is because, you know, A, they're lighting up a, you know, state that's smaller than California, and B, that they have a nationally enforced standard. But, I hope to see Apple creep towards it, right? Because at some level, I think Apple may be like 30% of the market in the United States. They're only 12% of the market worldwide. And I think at some level, they will need to behave nicely with a lot of international carriers. I hope that they will want to behave nicely with a bunch of international carriers that aren't particularly going to care about supporting some squirrely non-SMS spec that is iOS specific. And I don't know. Apple's tradition is like, we'll wait until we're ready. Except with Maps, then they just launched it and destroyed the credibility of an entire brand. But again, I'm snarking today because it's fun, and I'm on All About Android.
You're fitting right in.
I mean, so the good news is if you've got a Galaxy S9, you could probably avoid this by just not using the default texting app.
Yes. Yeah. The alternative.
Of which there are very many, including Android Messages, which has now an online web version that you can use.
It's in the app section, Flo. Wait.
Sorry. I gave away the app section. We'll talk about that later. Talk about that later.
If you're on a Galaxy, if you're on a Samsung, and you want to avoid this, either use Android Messages or use Textra, and then you'll avoid this problem.
So. Yes, or use Allo, and nobody will have to talk to you ever. except me, Ron, and Jason. So moving on to another little bit of Android news. And you may have seen this yesterday pop up, which is the Android P Beta Developer Preview 4. To say that lightly, it was released for the Pixels, for the Pixel phones out there. So it includes a couple of very minor little things, including subtle iconography changes throughout the system, things like a revamped status bar, a revamped notification shade, a slightly different setting screen. The back button has also been slightly tweaked a little bit so that it's thinner. But of course, the main emphasis of this Android P is the gesture navigation. And so now the scrub bars as part of the gesture nav, they're more obvious to sort of just make it easier to use. So Ars Technica has a pretty good little slideshow about the old and the new. I'm still not on the developer preview just because I need to have a stable version of Android right now to test some smart home apps. But I know that there's a lot of little stories out there about things that people are discovering, tinkers, other developers, other Android enthusiasts.
How many, Flo, how many beta dev previews do we get before we get full release? Because I feel like we're close, right?
If I recall correctly from what I was reading this morning, I believe this is the last one.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think I saw that. So which means that the release will be imminent, will be soon.
It's imminent, I guess. I mean, it could very well still be up until October. We're not going to see anything. But actually, I think it might come before we have a hardware announcement. What am I saying?
I mean, here we are in early July, so they've got to get feedback on this preview and this beta and work stuff out. It's conceivable we could have by the end of the summer, we could have this rolled out, which then we will find out what the name is, and we'll find out what delicious dessert it would be.
What delicious dessert I will be stuffing my face with for the rest of next year.
Exactly.
Yes.
Patrick, do you want to vote for, or do you want to throw a candidate in the ring for what they're going to name Android P?
Kumquat.
Kumquat.
No wait, Android P. Sorry, yeah. I was a year out. My bad. God, what's a P?
Many years out.
You got one. You got one right behind you, on the wall.
Pineapple.
Oh yeah.
Ooh.
Could be. I didn't even think about that.
Candy pineapple.
Oh, pineapple. Hey, that might work. It's got kind of a little like mod tropical color scheme.
What would that do to our mutual friend's business there, Patrick? if they name it pineapple.
I can't even imagine. Well, peanut brittle, peanut butter, peanut butter bars. Wow. Yeah. I just found a horrible website that lists every candy from A to Z. Pearson Bun Bar, Pearson Nut Goody, Pearson Salted. There's a lot. Peeps. My least favorite. Peeps. Pez.
Oh, that Peeps. Peeps hasn't
Pixie
come up at
Sticks.
All. Yeah.
Pop Rocks. Oh, wow. This is great. Think about it. Peanut brittle, peanut butter, Pez, Pixie Sticks, or Pop Rocks. I want it to be Pop Rocks in the worst possible way.
That would be a more aggressive choice than, you know, some of the previous ones.
I mean, I've already been trying it out with the Oreos with Pop Rocks in them, so I'm prepared for all the popping sounds that will happen.
Well, let's pop on into hardware.
Yeah, let's pop on into some hardware. More
all right, because we can't stop talking about Samsung, Leak-a-rama happened again. So Samsung's been rumored to be working on an Android Go phone, supposedly codenamed or named the Samsung Galaxy J2 Core, which I feel like is a code name.
J2 Core.
But yeah, I got the leak treatment today as photos of the device leaked out. And of course, you know, in terms of whenever we get one of these photo leaks of a new phone, we don't really, you know, talk about the bezel or the display, but rather what's on the screen. And everybody was screaming about the fact that an Android Go phone with Samsung apps on it, because everyone just assumed that Android Go would be stock Android because it's the lower cost, you know, kind of developing, you know, kind of lower entry level phone kind of thing. And so, of course, it'd be running stock Android. But a lot of people made the observation, including Dave Ruddock on Twitter, said, you know, reminded everybody that Android Go is not the same as Android One and can actually be skinned and customized to whatever extent an OEM wants. So, right. So Samsung could be working on an Android Go phone with all those lovely Samsung apps, including the messaging app.
So. Yes, including the app that sends all of your pictures to random people.
That pure Android experience you're so desperate for.
Yeah,
the whole Android Oreo Go edition. That always...
It is. It's kind of a bummer. It is. I mean, I get it, maybe, but it is also kind of a bummer because you hear Android in the name and instinctively you think it's got something to do with stock. It's got something closer to Google, but it's really just this is a very cheap phone that does all of these very basic things, and you're not going to have the apps that you think are going to be on them.
Well, I part of me is like, you know, we hear it. Google are aware that, like, you know, Android's aware that there are people want the latest operating system, but they can only buy a cheap phone, so they want to deliver that, and they develop this, you know, slim down, speedy, ready for not having 8 gigabytes of RAM, you know, and 92 cores in your processor. They build this, and then immediately Samsung is going to cruft it up, you know, with their horrible interface, and then your carrier is going to dump a bunch of garbage onto it that makes it more frustrating to use. I find it really frustrating that it's so difficult to find a relatively pure Android experience, and then on the phones where it should be this incredible priority to keep things simple and slim and functional. Of course Samsung's going to put their own little flavor on it.
I mean,
in whatever snarky voice.
Go ahead, Ron.
I mean, they put
I'm not
so
a big
much
fan
development.
Of Samsung's interface. Sorry.
No, but who is? But who? I want to find the person who is. Like, who? Anybody who likes Samsung's interface and likes the bloatware that they install. I mean, I get that they are trying to build a, you know, like Apple, an ecosystem and get everybody using their apps and all this sort of stuff. But anybody who knows anything knows that it's just bloatware and it's annoying. But they've put so much money into that development, they can't, they have to justify using it, right? And so it becomes this whole vicious cycle of bloatware that never will go away.
This is the bloatware that never ends.
But Flo, you're pro Samsung. What's your take on the bloatware?
I have a Galaxy S9 Plus around, but part of the reason I'm not kind of using it as a fun daily driver is because I'm not crazy about the interface. It's wildly different from what I'm using on the Pixel.
Yep.
But, you know, there is one particular interface which I appreciate that they don't do too much skinning to, and that's from OnePlus. This is actually our next little news item. The OnePlus, this is a nice little surprise for OnePlus users, by the way. So the OnePlus 5 and 5T got Project Trouble through the latest Oxygen OS beta. Now, this is super exciting for OnePlus fans and maybe anybody who is getting a hand-me-down phone from like an enthusiast friend, which is kind of cool. I want to know who your friend is. We already know they were integrating it with the latest OnePlus 6, so now it's coming into OnePlus 5. It's surprising. There were no plans that they were going to do this, but this means that this particular beta is in support of Google's initiative to bring faster Android updates to devices. So this is going to allow the OnePlus devices to get all of the updates in the manner that Google sort of intended with Android. Things like security patches, full OS upgrades, and it's going to take a shorter amount of time than before. And I know OnePlus hasn't always had like the best track record of software updates, but I feel like they're turning a corner, and the more we talk about the OnePlus being like the replacement Nexus of the Android world, I feel like this is what we mean when we're talking about it. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Mm.
Seems smart to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's only a beta update, so this isn't like full for everybody. And it could be a while before you see it rolled out to your phone, but the fact that it's in beta, it's floating around, it's a good thing to think about. And also it just sort of tells us about how useful Project Trouble is gonna be across the board, not just for Google. So
yeah, Trouble's clearly the future of updates and things like that. So it's nice to see OnePlus kind of committing to that future.
Well, I mean, I would certainly hope that they would do that, considering all the fans out there who want software updates, consistent.
Patrick, have you
sorry, I'm just like, OnePlus? Yeah, actually, Shannon reviewed the OnePlus 6 on TechThing a couple weeks ago, and I was really impressed because part of it was like, is it a flagship or is it still a flagship killer? And I was just like, you know, the performance for the money is, well, you laugh, right? But it's
well,
like, what's
still
the, what's
that quote? It's line? Still like floating yeah. around, you know?
Yeah, I think it is. It's their flagship. It is a flagship because if you stack it up next to a Pixel 2, it's looking like a bargain. You know, I also got to say that just the idea of having 256 gigabytes of storage on a phone for $630 is like, but I get excited. It's been interesting to watch because, you know, for a while sort of Motorola kind of seemed to lost the path. Now they seem to be coming back with this sort of intense force, and you've got HTC doing some great things, and, you know, Google has abandoned the Nexus. I like how you put that, how OnePlus is kind of the new Nexus, which makes me want to ask you guys, how do you feel about like the Element and whatever? Is Samsung or is Sony ever going to have a hugely popular Android phone again? But I don't want to derail all the conversations.
It's funny you mentioned that, though, because we talked a lot about Sony and about how I never see a Sony phone in the wild ever.
Never seen one on a subway. I've seen plenty of LG and HTC. I've seen HTC M7 still, but I never see any Sony devices in the wild.
Where are they going?
Yeah,
presumably,
I don't know.
The division is still open. Presumably, they are selling several phones. Are they all in Japan? You know,
I have a feeling it's like Japan and Estonia are like the only ones still using.
Well, we embarrassingly found out when a listener pointed out that they are widely available at Best Buy's in the United States. You can go to the Best Buy website right now, and there's the Sony Xperia phones. They're just sitting there. So someone's buying them, just not in New York or the Bay Area.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I'm not buying them. I haven't used one in years.
Right. So we can't go more than a few minutes without talking about Samsung.
Not on today's show.
I feel like, it's the Samsung and Rama. But listen, I missed the show a couple of weeks ago, and you guys talked a little bit about the rumored Samsung Galaxy X, which, Patrick, I you won't be surprised to find out that the idea of a foldable phone is one that I'm very interested in. And the Samsung Galaxy S is indeed Samsung's foldable phone prototype. That rumor started swirling around a couple of weeks ago. But now, just recently today, yesterday and today, thanks to a report from the blog IT Home, which appears to be Japanese or Asian of some type. I couldn't read we can pull up that website and you can see what language it's in. But thanks to a report from them, the Galaxy X is rumored to have a battery with a possibly massive 6,000 milliamp foldable battery as part of the design. So not only is the display foldable, but the battery would be foldable, which would unlock up to between 3,000 and 6,000 milliamps worth of battery power. And this is just, I mean, it's amazing. Look at that. That's a foldable battery right there in that photo. and then, of course, you know, all the rumors of the Galaxy S has sparked all these theories about what a foldable phone might be. And we saw over on Slash Gear speculating about how the foldable battery with the foldable phone might roll into Samsung's foldable OLED screen. There's video of it that came out about a year ago or so that supposedly is going into production in 2018, but we've got yet to have confirmation of that. But it looks as if Samsung, the foldable division of Samsung, they've got the foldable screen, the foldable battery. They are ready to fold this phone.
Wow. Look at that. Look at that. It's like a snap bracelet.
Yeah, it's like a scroll. It's like one of those. Yes. Yeah, look at that. It's amazing.
The Ten Commandments. Oh, wait, that was on Rock.
So Patrick, you are a hardware guru. Do you think we'll see a foldable phone in actual mass production in use in our lifetime?
Yes. In our lifetime? Yes. But, you know, we'll be living longer than our parents. So I don't know if we're going to see it anytime soon. you know, part of me wonders, like, what yields are like when that's, you know, that retractable, you know, slide. I want to say folding, but when you, I have no brain left at this point. It's been a long week, and it's only Tuesday. I mean, I've been really curious. Like every time I see one of those screens, it sort of retracts and rolls up like a blind. You know, I keep thinking, like, you know, how is it going to hold up over time? I think that's the big question. I also, you know, I think that design, like the design you're looking at now, like the idea of the folding phone, I think makes more sense to me. Although having played around with some folding demos at CES, I don't know how much I want a book type opening fold, but that's an interesting, I like the shape of that one, rather than being sort of a standard, like we put 2 6-inch screens and now you have 2 6-inch screens side by side, which makes no sense to me. But the rollable OLED prototype, I love the idea of that, but I've if you've ever actually read a scroll, you know, you pull it out and, you know, you tend to twist it or hold it or it gets torqued, and then you get thrown out of the special collections of the library and you're never allowed back again. But the you know, I would be curious, like, you know, I'm trying to imagine like being on a train with my foldable phone that I'm trying to do my reading on and being like,
oh no, it's rolling away.
Yeah. You know, like it would be, I mean, it would be amazing, right? If you had sort of like your Bluetooth headset and your phone that rolls up in your pocket and then you pull it out and you're like, okay, you know, but you know, it's one of those things where you look at it and it's like, that's really cool. But there's going to have to be a mechanism that holds it open, because otherwise you would have to sort of like use your pinky to stretch it out so you could use the in, you know what I mean? Like, it's really cool. It's really neat. I have no idea how they're going to turn that into a device that you would actually use on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I saw some chatter and speculation that the foldable phone concept would be more like a wallet. And there would be a foldable portion of the screen, much like the Galaxy Edge from a couple of years ago, that would give you a bit of display readout. Like, mainly it would be for notifications. Yeah. Like when you close the phone, there'd be a little foldable part that lips over that gives you notifications when the phone is in closed mode, and then you can open back up like a wallet. I don't know. I just like, give me different stuff. I'm tired. We've said this. You know, I'm tired of the crop of phone designs of the brick. You know, I want foldable, I want bezel-less, I want the future, I want the next generation of phone designs. And if this is how we get there,
phones.
Then I'm for it.
Thicker,
huh?
Well, I just like, you know, I bought an iPhone 6, and I didn't have a case on it immediately. And I cracked the screen and bent it considerably just by putting it in my back pocket in the first 6 days of ownership, which, given that I'd been waiting like 2 years to buy a new phone, was kind of heartbreaking and enraging. So on one hand, part of me mostly wants, you know, give me another 2 millimeters thickness on the phone, make it stronger, and give me another 1,000 milliamp hours of battery life. Like, I'm you know, I get, you know, thin is sexy. Thin is the future. Thin is, but you when you get thin versus the real world, it doesn't tend to work out as well. And so many of the issues, like, you know, we're fighting problems with Z depth and battery life, and it's just like, just make the phone a couple millimeters thicker and give yourself a huge amount of space to put more battery in. So I do like that the link from the ET news where it showed the phone that's folded over like a wallet. You know, I'd be really curious to see what using a phone like that would be like, and how well the hinge held up, and, you know, is it irritating to have that, you know, how tiny can they make the bezel in the center? You know, because that would be a case where you could have this device that folds down small, would have a tremendous amount of space for battery. And, you know, I'm curious, because I, you know, there's a reason we keep coming back to, you know, the chocolate bar, because the chocolate bar kind of works. And every time we, you know, LG's like, oh, you know, we have a curved phone. They do this phone, they do that phone. But, you know, everything kind of keeps swirling back to, we're going to give you a 7-inch screen, because really, people, you shouldn't be able to fit your phone in your pocket. I don't know. Maybe the reason they're pursuing foldable phones is just because they want to be able to say, we have the first 7-inch phone.
Yes.
But literally, a 7-inch phone won't fit in anything other than a pair of Carhartts, which is, you know.
A well-entrusted, you know, brand among those of us.
A well-entrusted brand, but, you know, I love me some Carhartts, but, you know,
I see a lot of tiny purses out in Oakland and San Francisco on Friday night, and you're not going to fit that giant ass phone in that little tiny purse.
That's why I bought the 5-inch Pixel 2. I didn't want anything bigger than a 5-inch screen. I wonder if the future of the phone is not even something tangible, but, you know, something a little more ethereal, you know, all this move to the assistant and voice commands. I feel like they really want us to interact with our phones that way now. And I mean, imagine if your clothing could be like the interface for your phone and all this stuff, and it just like exists inside your head. I don't know. I'm just taking us forward 300 years or something.
Maybe 20 years till they implement.
Maybe 20 years at this point. Yes, maybe 20 years.
I mean, it depends on like if I'm going to have a voice assistant permanently buried in my skull, or at least buried in my skull till I go to, you know, whatever the 21st century equivalent of Best Buy is, and have like the old phone, you know, the chip. You know what I mean? Like literally, I can totally see you're slotting your phone. But part of me is like, can you imagine how irritating it would be to have Siri inside your skull?
Even the Google Assistant, I don't need it in my head that often.
When I accidentally hit my Pixel Buds when I tap it to press play and actually do a double tap, and then Assistant starts reading me every notification or the status, I'm like, oh my god, just stop, get out of my head! Like,
you're actually using Pixel Buds?
I am using Pixel Buds. They're right here. I use them every day on the subway, my friend. Yep,
you're that guy.
I'm that guy.
I've been waiting to see someone actually. And return them. It's either that or
Q-tips. I mean, AirPods.
I will say I'm seeing more Pixel Buds on the subway here in New York than in recent months. I don't know if the price went down or whatever, but I've spotted at least more than five in the last month or so, other than me.
Of the 11 million people that ride the New York City subway system,
six of them.
Welcome to New York.
Six of them.
Has the firmware gotten better?
Have
there been enough firmware updates to make them function better?
The latest updates have been good. I mean, I have no problem with them. I mean, literally all I'm doing is I'm connecting and I'm listening to podcasts and I'm disconnecting. I'm on computer. That's about all I'm doing. I'm not doing the translate stuff. You know, every now and then I have it read my messages to me, but I'm not dictating messages to it because I don't want to be that guy who's just talking to himself on the street. but it's the seamless. As soon as I turn Bluetooth on, they connect automatically. I don't have to do anything else, like instantaneously. And the fidelity is fine. The audio is – I mean, I'm listening to podcasts, so I'm not that worried about audio quality. And even music is all right. But, Patrick, you know how I'm half deaf from not wearing earplugs over all the years, so I can't notice good quality or not anymore. But
the best thing about Google Pixels in the New York City subway is you really can't tell – with the noise of a subway, you really can't tell how awful the audio quality is on the Pixel
box.
True.
Exactly.
Not to be cool.
It's true. Yeah. All right. Let's get some noise from an email going, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because that's my segue for today. That's my segue into our email. We've got an email from a listener/viewer, however you like to consume us. There, you can do it anyway.
Consume us, please.
Consume us through your ear or through your mouth or through your eyes, however. This one is from David Clark. I know this isn't exactly an Android question. Best show for you to send this in, because we're talking about Samsung today, but hopefully it is close enough. My Windows laptop and OG Chromebook Flip are both showing their age, and I am going to need to replace them this year. I would love to go all in on a Pixelbook and say goodbye to Windows, but there is always that one thing you need Windows for. In my case, I need to be able to print directly from my computer over USB. I'm not sure this is easy to do with a Chromebook yet, since I have been unable to test it. I also will be getting a vinyl cutter for cutting vinyl lettering and graphics for work soon, and cannot find much info online about if this type of printing is possible with the Chromebook. Software is not a problem with the recent edition of Linux app on Chrome. I'm just not sure about the printer compatibility. Well, good news, David, is that you can add printer compatibility to your Chromebook if you need to. There is a...
Well, it's... Good news with a caveat.
Yeah, good news with a caveat, right. It depends if it's cloud-ready, so you can go to google.com/cloudprint to add a cloud-ready printer. Now, I have this set up at my house. I have a Brother printer, and it works pretty darn well, but that's because we have the printer on the network, so it's pretty easy to just hop on there. and printer. But if you've got a classic printer, you can go into the upper right-hand corner of the Chrome browser window, so not the actual operating system. And then you go into the settings, click on Show Advanced Settings, go to the section labeled Cloud Print, click on the Manage button, and then you're going to have to enter... You're going to have to enter in the Chrome colon backslash backslash devices command to into the Chrome's address bar or Omnibox to be able to go to that particular section of your devices. And then from there, you'll have to authenticate through your Google account and try and add a printer classically.
So that's if the printer, if the classic printer is connected to the network,
yes.
you can do it via the Cloud Print. If you have a USB printer that isn't connected, that you don't have another computer and it's not connected to the network, if it's an HP printer,
yes.
you can print via USB because there's the HP Print for Chrome app that allows you to do that. If you don't have an HP printer, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah.
Because no other USB printers will work. I don't even know about vinyl cutters, unfortunately. I don't think vinyl printers will. I haven't heard of any support for Chromebook on that level.
You'll probably have to create at the very least something like a Raspberry Pi to create a dedicated sort of mm-hmm. print server for the vinyl cutter. Because vinyl cutters are one of those things where the operating system, or I should say the drivers for them, are either magnificent or just one of the great nightmares of the universe. I mean, in theory, right, you can use a Pixelbook or a Chromebook with a USB cable. It's just whether or not it's actually going to recognize and do anything with that thing you've just plugged into it.
A lot of Chromebooks have USB-C. Sorry, Patrick. I just want to add a lot of Chromebooks have USB-C, so you'd have to use it with an adapter, and sometimes it doesn't always work.
I feel the Chromebooks and the Pixelbooks and all this stuff, that they're great, but then, like David says, you reach the thing, oh, I need to do this, and then you hit a wall. But Flo, you're using it as a daily driver, right?
Like, I am, but I also write for a living, which is pretty much I can do that on anything. And I've been using the Pixelbook as a daily driver for a majority of the day. But you know, my suggestion to you, David, would be to keep that Windows PC around if you can for that one thing. I know it's silly, but that's why I have a Windows PC, is just for Lightroom. Because the Chromebook is never going to replace the full use of Adobe's Creative Cloud.
Yep.
It's the way it is. It's just the way it is.
All right. Well, and Adobe's Creative Cloud is a much used app, which is a great segue to go into apps.
Apps.
I love a good segue. I'm sorry.
I've never ridden a segue, just by the way. I've never ridden an actual standing wheel thing.
I wrote a segue when it first came out. I got to ride it. Like the first month it came out, I got because it was long story. But yes, I got to ride a segue. Anyway, all right. Well, we talked about it earlier in the show. Messaging, and Flo mentioned that the long awaited Android messaging app update from Google came out, and it's simply called Messages. And what's great about it is that they've finally evolved the Messages app to be fairly competitive with the likes of Textra and the things like that. But it also finally added web-based messaging, similar to how Allo handles it, as well as WhatsApp. You can scan a QR code on the computer from your device, and you can send SMS messages from your desktop via that connection, via that link. So I switched over to it. I actually switched from Textra two messages to give it a test drive, and then I switched to the app that I'm going to show in the arena in a couple of minutes. But I likely will be switching back to it and sticking with messages. Flo, have you played with it at all, or are you not? You didn't dip your toe into it.
I am only using messages because.
Okay,
I just,
so you moved over completely, right?
Yeah, and I have been. I mean, I was using that app Text.2 that you had brought into the arena as well to try and do the whole desktop thing so that I didn't have to like type on the tiny phone. But this is just as easy. All you have to do is scan a barcode, just like on Allo, and it just opens it in your browser window. Bada bing, bada boom.
Cool. All right. So thank you, Google, for finally making a step forward in the messaging world. Let's see if it sticks.
Yeah. Let us wait and see. While we're waiting, we can check out the Android Excellence apps and games, which have been announced for the third quarter of 2018. That's what we're heading into right now. And my gosh, how the year has moved by so quickly. So we saw some familiar names like Trello. Shout out to friend of the show, Huynh Tu Dao. And the Android team there as well. And also Pocket Cast. So shout out to another friend of the show, Russell Ivanovich, and the Pocket Cast crew. And there are some other apps listed that haven't made their way to the arena yet. And maybe we're giving them away, but who cares? We've got some.
I always find it fascinating when Google like gives these awards for best apps and we've never talked about them.
Yes. Yeah, like what is Tokopedia?
How
like,
dare they?
I mean, well, it helps us because it means that we figure out what Google likes in the Play Store. But yeah, there are apps. There's one called Beeling U App, which helps you learn a new language. Wink Music with a Y, W-Y-N-K, which is a music app that didn't make our roundup. And a couple of others like the one I just mentioned, Tokopedia. I don't even know what that is, but it just sounds cute. And
I think it's a shopping app. I looked at that.
Well,
one.
There you go. Sounds cute.
I thought it was. I mean, like a couple of months ago, we did a whole roundup of music apps, like the state of music apps on Android. And I never even heard of Wink Music before. Like now, I got to go check that one out and see why Google said this is a top app. So
yeah, I'm very curious. let's see. It is red, just like YouTube.
Yes. Everybody. Well, speaking of. Of red just like YouTube and music apps. So we got one more email. Dave M. writes in and he says, with YouTube Music and the future of Google Play Music in the serious question, I have to wonder what subscribers of Google Play Music are going to do with all the tracks they've uploaded to Google Play Music. I have many albums that are not available on any subscription service that I have access to via Google Play Music. I won't have access to those albums when Google Play Music goes away. Is there any alternative service that works like Google Play Music? Clearly, YouTube Music isn't going to allow us to upload music we didn't write and perform ourselves. And actually, Dave, YouTube Music will be keeping all of your uploaded tracks. And Google said that they will be enabling the same functionality to upload your own tracks to YouTube Music. So you don't have to worry. We covered this back in May, but I thought it was worth resurfacing that everything that you love about Google Play Music will eventually be present in YouTube Music. Whether or not they deliver on that promise, we'll see. So
we indeed shall see.
And I don't know. Patrick, were you affected by the Google Play Music, YouTube Music rollout?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I still buy CDs. Although apparently CDs are going away from Best Buy and they're approximately, you know, 8 square feet of your average Walmart these days. But whenever possible, I buy CDs, rip them to flack. I subscribe to a whole bunch of – I started reviewing a lot of headphones and audio gear. So I started with Spotify and ended up with Tidal.
Yeah, I was going to say. Are you on Tidal?
I'm on Tidal, but I don't – I you know, there's a – Tidal's interface is so bad. Yeah. There's an amazing company called Rune Labs, and their Rune music application, basically, it's this incredible way of streaming and sharing and viewing your music collection because they bring a ton of metadata in. Their idea is kind of like to recreate that experience of opening the gatefold on a big disc LP, not that they're vinyl, but just the idea that you have a whole bunch of visual information. And when I first started using Rune, I was like, oh, this application exists because Tidal's interface sucks. And then I realized Rune was also excellent for your personal audio collection. But I say all of that because I never really got into the idea, because I like to have the highest possible quality file I can stuff on my phone. I never particularly got into most of the upload your music and stream it because the audio quality wasn't there. But yeah, I've got Spotify Premium. I've got the lossless version of Tidal. I just basically carry everything with me. I buy 128 gigabyte phones just so I can carry like 60 gigs of music wherever I go.
Well, that's good because when you're out of a cellular area, I mean, I've got no music because I have nothing downloaded.
Yeah.
So I'm out of luck. I have to sit in silence.
I have two. It's so funny because I have two playlists on Google Play Music downloaded onto my phone. I have my airplane takeoff music playlist that I listen to when during takeoff when I go to sleep. And then I've got my playlist I listen to when I run a 10K race. Like, I've got about an hour of music. Actually, Patrick, you'd appreciate it. It's a lot of Youth of Today and Minor Threat and Gorilla Biscuits and stuff like that. But those are the only two playlists I've downloaded. I have like 64 gig of space left on this phone, but I don't download music locally at all. And then I find myself in a situation like in a plane or out of cellular service, and I only have those two playlists to access. I really should spend more time to download more music, I guess. So.
I literally think between Tidal and Spotify, or certainly on Tidal, I think I've downloaded like 40 gigabytes of music onto this phone. But I also – I'm a music geek. I have bad music issues. And
you do.
Sounds like good music issues. It sounds like you really appreciate it.
Oh no, I love music, but it's I like to have all of my music nearby just in case the streaming doesn't work. Which, you know, if you drive like 5 minutes outside of Petaluma or 20 minutes outside of San Francisco, it's easy to get into a giant hole where the streaming stops. Which led to one of my favorite arguments with somebody. No one, you know, it's ridiculous. No one really gets into places where you can't get signal anymore.
No, they do. Like, have you tried behind a hill or in a tunnel?
Yes.
Or have you tried in
San Francisco?
Inside any building if you're on T-Mobile.
Yeah. Or inside any building if you're in just a giant metropolitan city.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating. I'm in my office. I'm in a conference room with no windows, and I have no service because I'm on T-Mobile, and their band can't penetrate, 30 square feet of office space for some reason. It drives me crazy. So,
well, I'm not going to go down the bandwidth rabbit hole, but it's amazing how different. Because of where when companies got access to different bandwidths in different part of the country, you can watch the performance of a carrier change radically depending on region, depending on when they entered that region and who's access, what bandwidth they have. It's a little kind of fascinates me, and it's incredibly inside baseball, so I'll stop myself.
It is, but I will tell you, I definitely notice a speed change from Northern California to Southern California. It was so fun. It's the same state!
Anyway. Well, it's a very big state, Flo.
I know it's a big state, but like, give me some LTE in SoCal, please. Anyway, that was me last week. Anyway, moving on.
60 million people down there.
Sure, it's a lot of people. All right, let's go into the arena. Let's do it.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Only one wins. Who won last week?
All right. So I'll tell you who won last week. Last week in episode 375, Flo pulls out a win.
Oh, sweet.
With Kiwi Browser. I came in second with Statflix.
Nice.
And then I believe Jason came in third with Rover. And our guest came in last with Me Too, which I'm surprised that did so low, actually. And so thanks to Wade County in the chat room, after 26 weeks of the arena, guests are still winning with 74 points. So, Patrick, your entry will go with the guest team. So currently you're in first place. Congratulations. I'm in second place with 69 points. Flo has moved up into firmly into third place with 58 points. And Jason, who's going to miss this week and not earn any points, is in last with 54 points. So there you go. Those are the results for last week. So since Flo won, she will go last. And since Patrick is our guest, he will go second, which means I will go first.
All right.
So as we talked about earlier, I'm really into messaging. I'm really into the latest and greatest, and I want to solve the text messaging problem. But I found an app this week that is somewhat curious. It's called Me Messaging, M-E-I Messaging. And what it is it is machine-based AI baked into your messaging app. So on the surface, it's very similar to any messaging app. I'm not going to go into any of my text messages because I'll show you my friends' phone numbers and you can see all my friends talking. But what can happen is that this glowing thing in the upper left-hand corner, it analyzes all of your conversations and analyzes all of your discussions with your friends and then spits back to you a breakdown of your personality based on your text message.
What?
Exactly.
Oh, I'm going to keep going.
So according to my text messages, I am 83% open. So I can drill down into my openness rating. So I my level of creativity and curiosity is 83%. I am in the balance between consistency and adventurous. I lean more towards consistency with 33% in the adventurous score. I enjoy familiar routines and prefer not to deviate from them. This is where it goes a little off the rails because it says artistic interests, 35%, which means that I'm more unconcerned with art than I am appreciative of art, which is ironic because I work in an art-based business, but just because that doesn't come across. But yeah, so what it does is it goes through all of these personality details. Like I'm going to go into my emotional control and I get 82% in terms of emotional control. And on the anger scale, I am more mild-tempered than I am fiery. I've got 23% mild-tempered. It takes a lot to get me angry, which is true. I'm more self-assured than prone to worry. I'm more content than melancholy. And I'm more hedonistic than self-controlled, which is – so
– I want to know how it's making these decisions. These are really odd, some of these.
So when you set up – when you set up the app, you register it, and then it goes through and takes a couple of minutes to read all of your messages, and it's constantly reading them as you're receiving and sending messages, and it's using machine learning to analyze the conversation and analyze your response, and then you know by using keywords and words, you know, like identifying, you know, what your messages are, is telling you based on these scales where you are. So like under cautiousness, I'm more deliberate than bold. I carefully think through decisions before making them. So I got to imagine that they have some sort of rule set that is defining what these personality details mean. They also show you, Victor, if you can take away the lower third for our viewers can see the bottom of the screen, it just shows you your top five characteristics in addition to your personality. I'm trusting of others. I'm content. I'm deliberate. I'm calm seeking and I'm calm under pressure. Which I got to imagine I must have texted somebody going, calm down, it's going to be fine. So in addition to analyzing your text messages, it also does a Google Assistant-like suggested responses. So based on your responses in the past and based how you talk to somebody, it can serve up a couple of options of what you would want to respond. And I admit some of the responses are sound like me. So I'll give that credit. When you start a message, it's very simple interface. You enter in a name, you can type something, it's just a standard messaging. You know, it's got emojis, you can attach photos and take a picture of your camera, add a location. In terms of settings, you can adjust the appearance. This is very much a dark kind of black and white minimalist kind of approach, but you can change the font family. You can make all adjustments to whether it shows avatars or not. You can identify what you know, it gives you a lot of control over timestamps and splitting SMS and things like that. Full notification control. You can change your LED colors, vibration, sounds, all that fun stuff. So, but the whole machine learning aspect of it is what got me for it, and the analysis of my personality based off my text messaging, which I find very funny. Now, this only works with SMS. It does not work with WhatsApp or with Signal or with Telegram or any of the other kind of messaging app. It's just analyzing your SMS client. So if you're a heavy SMS user and you want to find out more about your personality, me messaging may be the way to go. So yeah, so it's free in the Google Play Store. Check it out. Oh, one other thing that I did notice that I liked about this was in the settings. There we go, right here. You can delete the account, delete my account, and it will just get rid of everything. And they're very clear on the privacy and all that for that stuff. That once you delete your account, they delete the whole record of all your messages and all that fun stuff. So it's one of those beta apps that's not quite released yet. So your mileage may vary. But if you want to add a little artificial intelligence to your SMS messaging, this is how you can do it. So there you go.
Apparently, I don't have enough data for it to analyze me. So I will send you a screenshot eventually when I figure out.
Yeah, it took a couple hours for it to analyze all the stuff in there and then for me to use it a little. So in a day or so, go back and check it out. So
then I'll let you know. We'll see how much more hedonistic I am than you.
Yes. All right. E-messaging, free in the Google Play Store. All right, Patrick, you are up next, sir.
Patrick, I've got your app installed here on my phone. I know that... you said it might not, but we can we could show it off.
Show it off. So Volumio is this really interesting. I'm a big Raspberry Pi fan, single board computers. Odroid would be another one of them that's out there. But Raspberry Pi is probably the one most people know. There's also a PC version of this, Asus Tinkerboard, a couple other stuff. But Volumio is essentially, it's to create sort of an audio streamer or an audio server where all of your audio files can live, and you can connect some basic services to it, some streaming services to it. And the Volumio app, they have an Android app, an iOS app, and the idea is that you can have all of your music on the Volumio device that's like a Raspberry Pi, and then you can use your phone to control it, stream it, or share it. And for me, like, the optimal situation to use this in is in the – I really like the interface. So you can have, like, if you have a giant audio collection and you're looking for a way to play it on something other than, say, a Sonos device, you can plug you basically take the output from a Raspberry Pi or connect the Raspberry Pi to a DAC and plug that into powered speakers or plug that into the auxiliary input on your amplifier or your VCR, your AVR. And it's just one of my favorite apps, and I am a big fan of doing odd little projects with Raspberry Pi boxes. Or if you want something, some better performance, take a look at the Odroid, especially the C2, which is another small single board computer. They also do Android running on the Odroid devices, should you be feeling really kind of crazy and adventurous. So, not nearly as exciting as having your soul analyzed by an AI to attempt to determine your level of creativity and whether or not you're to be trusted in emergency situations based on your text messaging habits.
No, this is cool. This is the kind of app I would expect for you, Patrick. Raspberry Pi, Tinker, little hardware, but it's a cool interface for sure.
I do like the interface. I like anything with a Galaxy background as well.
Yep. Always a plus.
Thank you so much, right, Patrick.
Volumio, free. Is that free? No, it's 99 cents. 99 cents. Store. Support your devs.
Please support them.
Yes. All right. Devs get to eat too.
I maybe phoned it in a little bit today. I didn't really phone it in. I found this app a couple weeks ago, and I decided to bring it because I want to do some fan service. And I am phoning it in. I'm going to do some fan service with this app. So this is called the Android Easter Egg Collection, and it is exactly what you think it does, and that is it shows you the Android Easter eggs for Android, different versions of Android. So this is Android Oreo, which is an octopus floating around there in the world. If you'd like to change it, you can choose based on the version. P is apparently still, we're just, it's incomplete, and there's a little, alert for it. It goes all the way back to Gingerbread, which shows you the zombie art that was hidden in there. We've got Honeycomb right there. You can see makes little, we've got a little Android Nan. I guess this one wasn't supposed to do anything. Oh, yep, it did it. Hold on. Let me show you. So remember how you have to tap sometimes, a bunch of times, for it to do anything? You have to do that on this too.
So it's the full experience.
Do it. You were just doing it. There we go. Okay. There it goes. And it crashed. Okay, right. Well, I think I hit that too many times. Just literally poking through all of these. There you go. You guys are a 4.0.
Poke, poke. So remember the Poke the Bunny app?
I do remember the Poke the Bunny app. They extract?
Here's Lollipop.
Did they extract these from the ROMs, or did they recreate them?
I believe they extracted these. Let me go back to the description here in the Play Store. It does not say. It just says you can experience all of them. So this was the game. Remember the Flappy Bird game or whatever it was called?
Yes.
There you go. You could play it in this one if you want. If you don't want to play that one, then you can go to Marshmallow Land.
Crazy. All right. Whee! Thank you, Flo, for phoning it in.
Wow. Android Easter Egg Collection. It's free. It's for the Android fan in you. How much of a fan are you to download this?
Go. All right. Well, we can find out. You can vote for your favorite app now. Jason's not here, so we don't have the fancy URL shortener, so we're just going with bit.ly. So go to bit.ly/AAA376. That's bit.ly/AAA376, where you can go to Google Plus and vote for your favorite app, and we'll find out which one Victor's going to vote for. Is it going to be me, Volumio, or Android Easter Egg Collection? And Victor's hemming and hawing. He goes to Volumio. He goes for the more techie of the three apps.
The more practical.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just found a use for that Raspberry Pi one at home.
Oh, I was going to say, is it the space background? I know how much Victor loves space backgrounds.
So, all right. So go to bit.ly/AA376. Make sure you vote in this week's poll because we need your points.
Please, give us your points. And, you know, we're going to give you some sage advice for this 4th of July holiday. Please don't light the firecrackers while you're still holding them or the fireworks. That's how accidents happen. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show this week. It was really great to finally meet you.
Oh, my pleasure. Sorry, I'm doing the sort of before and after firecracker.
I learned that in first grade. My teacher sat us all in a circle, and I remembered very vividly her telling us of how her nephew had blown off his fingers 4th of July. So I will always remember that story.
Terrifying.
Thanks,
terrifying.
To my first grade teacher.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, no, Patrick, do you have anything that you would like to tell people about? Anything that you you have a platform right here, right now? Anything you'd like to say
right now,
that will not cost us any money from the FCC?
I appreciate that. I do a weekly podcast with Robert Herron called AVXL, which is all about home theater and home audio and headphones and music and movies and basically getting the best experience you can out of the gear you got. We don't care what your budget is. We will help you get an amazing audio and video experience. It's AVXL.com. And, of course, I do Tech Thing, TEKTHING, with Shannon each and every week at TEKTHING.com. And yeah, we did a OnePlus 6 review a couple weeks ago. Really, really impressive phone. Although I do covet the LG V30's ridiculously over-the-top audio system. So.
You know, that Aubrey Plaza commercial keeps triggering my Google Home. Because she says, "Hey G," in it. It's just, and it always triggers it. You know.
Well, it's funny because we were watching that commercial, and my wife said, she's like, "Oh, they must be sending out a audio signal that we can't hear that makes Google Home not respond to the commercial because it should be going crazy." And I was like, "I don't think they are. I just think our Google Home is away from the TV and they can't hear it clearly."
Yeah, so, mine is right next to the speakers.
Yeah. Patrick, and you also do Twitch, right?
I do. This Week in Computer Hardware with Mr. Ryan Schrautz, which is going to be exciting because I understand Ryan will be in a location with no less than 9 children this week.
Oh.
Oh, my. Wow.
We will be recording on July 5th. He will be at a secret location. It's been pre-stocked with children, hopefully without firecrackers. So.
All right.
Yeah,
it'll
be interesting
to see
what's up to the news.
Thank you for joining us. After you.
Oh, my pleasure. I was going to say, it's always a July 4th is always a tough week for hardware news. So
that's for sure. So, thank you for joining us. It's as I said, it's any opportunity to podcast with you, I always jump at it. So glad to finally get you on the show.
Thank you, sir. Oh, it was my pleasure.
No. All right, my turn. Yes, if you want to follow me, I will always be RonXO on Twitter and on Instagram. And I'm just trying to enjoy summer, man. I'm just living life. So there you go. I'm all about World Cup these days. So if you're into the World Cup, there you go. That's it. I got nothing to plug. I got nothing really exciting to plug. I'm working on stuff, just nothing I can't talk about. So although maybe next week I'll have something I can talk about. So there you go. There's a tease.
Ron, thanks for helping me with the doc today and putting this whole show together as we are missing our wheels being Jason Howell. Although, Patrick, thank you for filling in with your inflatable wheels. It helped us land this plane. Ron and I are the wings, in case you didn't know. So we can still land the plane, but it's going to be a rough landing. That's where I'm going with that. Victor, thank you so much for everything that you do every day.
Oh, no problem. It was fun.
Thank you. And thank you for being here.
And thanks, Patrick.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And so much thank you.
As for me, the new episode of Know How debuts this week. Just by the way, the day after 4th of July. So in 2 days from today, when this is being recorded, that's Thursday of this week when you're hopefully watching this show. Megan Maroney and I are going to be doing Know How. We've got our introductory episode coming out this week where we will talk about what we're going to talk about for the next 12 weeks. And we also, Megan does a fun little walkthrough of all the IoT in her home. So stay tuned for that this week. Yes, I am teasing you a little bit, but that's because I really want you to go watch it. So please go watch it, because Megan and I...
I'm going to watch it. A long time. I'm definitely going to watch it.
Please do. That's also on twit.tv. As for the rest of us, as for all of us here, I mean, now it's time to say goodbye. We will be back next week, as we are every week. Jason will be here to run this show, help land the plane. But in the meantime, you can leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. We will read those like we did on the show today. We've got a Twitter account at Android Show. We read those as well. Please tweet us. We love it. Arena apps, you can find the list at twit.to/AndroidApps and stats at twit.to/ArenaStats. Easy to remember. Show notes and past episodes are at twit.tv/AAA. You can come watch the show live if you'd like to. It is summertime. It's beautiful here in Petaluma. And you know, the sun doesn't go down till later, so you can watch us here in the show. All you need to do is send an email to tickets@twit.tv. It's free. We'll make sure to put out a chair for you so you have somewhere to sit. Come watch the show, or you can catch us on the live stream every Tuesday evening starting at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv/live. That's it for me and Ron and Patrick and Victor and Jason somewhere out there enjoying. Thank you, guys. Have a great rest of the week and enjoy your holiday. Don't blow anything, please. Be safe.
Don't blow up anything.
Don't blow anything up.
You can blow.
You need to blow a bubble. Feel free to do that. But just don't let the balloon out into the air, because that will hurt the environment.
Good night, Flo.
Good night.
All right, Florence.
This is my first time meeting Patrick Norton. It's great to meet you, Patrick. My name's Flo. Nice to meet you. So happy to have you here on the show today.
He shaved for the show, so that's nice of him.
Oh, yeah. Hey, didn't he have... Where did... Burke, where all his hair go?
All right. Anyway, Flo, you have some festive Oreos, don't you there?
Yeah, I do. Should we just do it?
Let's just do it.
Let's just do it.
You're the only one with the Oreos.
Just ham it up for the hams. I have a current gen fireworks Oreo and a past gen fireworks Oreo. Oop.
All right.
I also got some coffee to go with it.
What is the difference between the two other than freshness?
There is no difference between the two other than freshness.
All right.
I think this one is last year's, and this one is this year's.
Maybe give the last year's to Burke and the rest of the Twit staff, and you eat this year's.
I mean, I don't know. I think Jason tasked me with trying both of them, so.
But if they're the same flavor, then what's the point?
I don't know, but, you know, we got to see.
So what is the packaging say in the front as the flavoring? Give us the description.
Yeah, where is the No, the packing date.
Don't worry about that. Just what does it say on the cover of it?
It says Firework Oreo.
That's it.
Firework Oreo with popping candy.
There you go.
With popping candy. All right, I'm just going to open both of them.
Are you okay today, Flo, or are you?
A little off today. A little tired.
All right. So in honor of 4th of July, which is tomorrow here in America.
Whoop. All right. So we have what appears to be Funfetti Oreos.
Those look very, double stuff thick.
They are double stuff thick. Look at that. That's... That's thick.
Wow.
TICC right there. It's ready. It's and on the inside, it's this funfetti-like popping candy, which I believe are Pop Rocks. Not branded, but, you know, if you want to think about an effect, think Pop Rocks. Okay. There you go. And I'm going to try it. Apparently, it's supposed to pop in my mouth.
Victor. All right.
Not in my hands. So. These are good. They're popping just a tiny bit. It's definitely like a firecracker, not a firework. So this definitely wasn't an Oreo from the state of Wisconsin. This is an Oreo from the state of California. Oh, can you hear that? Can you hear the popping in my mouth?
What does it taste like? Does it taste like Red Hots? Or?
It tastes like regular Oreos, and at the end there's a popping sensation. It just like tastes Pop like Rocks? Regular Oreos with a popping sensation.
Like Pop Rocks?
Pop Rocks sprinkled in an Oreo?
All right.
I think you should put it in, what are they
In soda?
No, yeah, that would be awesome.
These are really good.
Funnel cake. Deep
I'm really
fried.
Into these. They taste just like regular Oreos, but with a popping effect at the end, which I actually don't mind.
So basically now you have to hoard a case or two of them because they won't be around again until July 4th.
You guys hear my mouth? Maybe not.
I don't think microphones work like that, Flo. All right, so what's your rating? What's your rating?
I'm going to give that an 8.5. It's really yummy.
An 8.5?
Yeah, it's really yummy. Wow. I like it. I like it.
All right.
I'm going to open the second one, but it's a little Oreo.
So Patrick, we've ever since they announced Android 8.0 was named Oreo, we've been subjecting Flo to eat a different Oreo once a week for nearly a year now.
Yep.
I have tremendous sympathy for you because a friend of mine does a YouTube channel, and one of the things the audience has kind of compelled him into is taste testing all the new flavors of Oreos. And some of them he's been really less than enthralled with, so you have my complete sympathy. they do some really perverse flavors for Oreos.
What was that disgusting one we had recently? Oh, pumpkin spice.
Oh, there was some definitely challenging flavors in there. That's for sure.
I don't want to say this too loud because there's a pumpkin spice everything enthusiast just on the other side of the wall from me. But that just sounds just, you
Hey,
know.
Some people love it. And I respect the pumpkin spice hustle. But for me, I'm just more of a hibiscus chocolate gal. Like it's one or the other. I'm not really partial to the pumpkin.
I'm just going to stick with my Oreos.
Just
the occasional
Oreos.
Foray into Numinos. Oh, man. But never Hydrox. Never Hydrox.
Oh, yes. Never and I was reminded by JJ in the chat that cherry cola was very bad. This is true.
There was a cherry cola Oreo?
And it was also very poppy, but it just like wasn't a nice pop like the 4th of July fireworks Oreos.
But what was great was that our discussion of the cherry cola Oreos prompted the woman who created the flavor for Oreo to respond on Twitter, not once, but several times. And luckily, I don't think she ever found the show, so she didn't hear us tear it apart.
I can't imagine the kind of rage somebody who designs Oreos for a living could drop.
Yeah. Right, Burke just came back, endorsed fully by Burke. These fireworks Oreos. So today's the 3rd of July in the United States. Go be patriotic and buy fireworks Oreos.